No, thank you. Sleepy. Come back in an hour.
Need sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God!
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George in New York. I'm Bill Caligiuri, and it's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning to everybody. Give everyone a special shout-out to our Fight TV viewers. And if you're not watching us on Fight TV, you're missing out, because you can download the app and watch us for free on your handheld. That includes your phone. Just go to fight.tv. That's FITE.TV/Billy C. Download the app right now and enjoy the show on your cell phone or any other handheld device you may have. And don't forget, there's some other shows and some great pay-per-view opportunities on Fight TV. I also want to give a shout out to our new affiliate in Brunswick, Georgia, WGIGAM. Glad to be part of WGIG's sports programming. So special shout out to all the listeners on WGIG. It's one of those days. WGIG AM. Today's show is being brought to you in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria and Italian Restaurant, located on St. Simon's Island, Georgia. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Or give my man a call, 912-268-2328. 912-268-2328. If you're traveling south on I-95, hey, it's literally a 15-minute detour for you to sit down and enjoy a great Italiano meal. Trust me when I tell you, it's well worth the stop. Check it out for the address, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com, or just give me a call, or drop me an email, that's better. Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. Today's show is also being brought to us by the Deontay Wilder, following the bouncing ball today with words? Today's show is also being brought to us in part by Deontay Wilder, Gerald Washington post-fight show, which you can tune into right here on BillyCBoxing.com, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/talkin, T-A-L-K-I-N, boxing, B-O-X-I-N-G, or on Fight TV this Saturday night. As soon as the fight is over, we will be going live approximately 6 minutes, so you can mark that one down. And finally, today's show is being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Mono, From Bondage to Baddest Man on the Planet. It's available right now where all great books are sold. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. Check out... if you want the book right now while you're watching or listening to the show, it's easy. Just go to BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. It's a great book, especially for this month, which is Black History Month here in the United States. So check it out. Once you read this book, you'll be like me. You'll definitely want the story of Tom Mono known. And to tell you the truth, I think it would make a great movie, but that's just me. Coming up later in the week, we got Boxing Hall of Famer Larry Hazard scheduled to join us on Wednesday. We also, thanks to you guys, have another request for a blast from the past. It's going to be on Kevin Kelly, the Flushing Flash. We'll be talking about him on Wednesday. We got the Fan-Driven Friday, providing we don't get a stack of emails. And by the way, if you take the time to drop us an email, we'll take the time to read it. That's happening on Friday. Today we got Dax Khan joining us in about a half hour, 40 minutes or so. But I also want to talk about the Adrian Broner fight, his victory over Adrian Granados. And if anyone was stupid enough to pay more than 1 cent for the Roy Jones Jr. against Bobby Gunn fight this past Friday night, we'll talk about that. We'll see what's going on from where these guys are heading from this point on. But right now, you gotta welcome. We missed him on Saturday when we did our post-fight show, but Joining us right now, my man Sal, Rocky Senicola. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, Bill. How are you today?
Oh, not too bad. The sun is shining here.
Glad to hear that. It might be melting some of that ice.
And snow. You know, we don't have much ice. We have all snow. But as long as it comes out and, you know, doesn't rain, we're okay. We're okay. But anyway, before we get started with the Broner-Granados fight, which we'll give our final thoughts on and where each guy goes, and we got some emails to read and we got some news to talk about. I just want to get everyone caught up. The NBA All-Star game took place this past weekend, actually yesterday. And the score was the West won 192 to 182. So congratulations to the NBA West All-Stars. And I just, the reason why I bring this up, Sal, is because, you know I like to dabble in sports betting a little bit. And
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I know you've heard about that. And the line was the West minus six, but the total rose to 356 and a half. Now, normally in an NBA basketball game, the totals for both teams is somewhere between anywhere from, you know, a low end like 200 points, and then the high end, I've seen it go to maybe 230, 235, something like that, but depending upon the team. But when I saw this just before tip-off at 356, I said to myself, 356 and a half, I said to myself, oh my goodness, you know, how many points are these guys going to score? Well, if you do the quick math, 192 plus 182, that equals 374. So anybody brave enough to bet the over on this game picked up a W. 356, they totaled 374 points. That's a hell of a lot of points to put up in one game of basketball, Sal.
Oh, yeah. I think that's got to be a record in itself, maybe, huh?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the All-Star game.
That's a lot of points.
Well, it's just like the football Pro Bowl. You know, they try to base it on offense. They think that the fans want to see more scoring. But I don't know. That's a lot of points. But nonetheless, let's get into some boxing. This past weekend on Showtime, Adrian Broner and Adrian Granados had a pretty entertaining fight. And at the end of the day, according to the three judges at ringside, it was a split decision win for Adrian Broner. One judge had it 97-93 in favor of Broner. One had it 97-93 in favor of Granados. And the third gave it to Broner 96-94. Now, I scored that fight too, Sal. And I also scored the fight 96-94. But I gave it in favor of Granados. I thought he landed more punches. I do, like I said on the post-fight show, I do think that Broner landed the harder shots, but the punch stats that they're publishing don't seem to make sense to what I watched on Saturday night. They're saying that Adrian Broner landed more punches and threw more punches, which I don't see as being even close. I thought that Granados pressed the action. He instigated the punches that were being thrown. And I thought that his lack of power might have hurt him because he was landing some flush shots on Broner. What was your thoughts on the fight?
Well, I saw the fight, and it was an eventful fight. There was a lot of action. It was good. And I saw Adrian Granados. He was pressing the action early on. I thought he was landing a barrage of punches. I thought he was throwing a lot of punches. And, Broner would catch him with the hooks and the uppercut. He always threw that uppercut, and that was effective for him when he was coming in with the right hand or when Granados was coming in on him. I thought it was a closer fight than I think I might have had it maybe 97-94 in favor of Broner. I saw it could have swayed, some of those rounds could have swayed to Granados, but Granados fought a good fight. But Broner did land some heavier shots, I saw, at points, at times, in my opinion.
You know, I'm reading, by the way, I know people are watching or listening to the show in many different formats, on different sites, on different radio stations, what have you. But if you're watching live right now, the chat room that we respond to is up on BillyCBoxing.com. And my man Coach just made a great point in the chat room. He says, like usual, I thought the judges did not give credit for body work for Granados. And I have a tendency to agree. That's the only way that you could, you know, even come close to saying that Adrian Broner threw and landed more punches than Granados is if you just, you know, don't even count, throw out the body attack. And I think not only judges do it, but I think, you know, obviously the Showtime stats guys that are hitting the keys on the keyboard, they're not doing it too. I mean, the body work is a critical facet of the sport of boxing, as we saw in the co-main event. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, Sal? It seems to, you know, sometimes it seems like they do score, and then other times they seem to just totally, like, not even count body work. I mean, I think that's crazy.
And it is, because body work is not only effective, but it does add up the points. I mean, when you see a Kressman in there and timing his shot to the liver, to the spleen, to the sides, to the solar plexus, you know, you're adding up points left and right. And it seems that most judges will look at that and it'll negate those points with a headshot from the other guy. But the truth of the matter is, body shots are so important in the game of boxing as far as points and as far as, you know, strategy. You know, you keep pounding on a guy's body. Those later rounds, man, the arms come down, the legs slow up, and I'll tell you. So I thought that Granados did offer an extensive body attack that I thought he was having some success on with Adrian Broner.
Adrian Broner, you know, he's got a lot of talent. I mean, let's give him credit.
He does. I don't care for the guy, but he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, I don't care for him anymore either. When he first came onto the scene, I loved him. You know, I mean, I didn't even mind the brushing of the hair, but he took it to another level that, in my opinion, made it very hard to like the guy. He's not a likable guy at all. But from a boxing standpoint, he's got some great hand speed. He's very accurate with his punches, and he can counterpunch very well. What I see now, and I said it in the post-fight show, which differs from his style when he was a lightweight, arguably at his best, is a guy that picks his shots. He's not very active. He takes a lot of time off during a three-minute round. He's not willing to exchange as much as he used to. And he even made a comment during the Lamont Peterson, David Avanesyan fight, when they interviewed him, that, you know, he's looking to get out with throwing and receiving as little bit of damage as he can. Well, he wanted to inflict damage, but he didn't want to receive any damage. And it kind of showed, Sal. It looks like he's captured and adopted the safety-first attitude of fights. And at the end of the day, it made him look ordinary. You know, that guy, that Adrian Broner that I thought was an exceptional fighter as a lightweight, isn't showing me enough. Now, maybe it was his conditioning. Maybe he was out of shape. He was gassed. He did seem to run out of gas. It was only a 10-round fight, so he seemed to have run out of gas by the time it hit round 7 or round 8. But I just didn't see the punch output from him. What do you think?
No, I agree with you 100%. You know, he would come on at times, but it almost looks like he doesn't go to sleep, but he's more dormant for like 40-second clip or 45-second clip, and it gives the opponent enough time to, you know, rethink his style, his approach to the fight, and land some good shots and combinations and get him ahead on a round. No, I know. It's like an ebb and flow. He does enough to be effective, and then he almost goes dormant or asleep for like 40 seconds at a time.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's a boring style, yeah. And you know, I mean, if that's what boxing has become, I mean, that's bad. You know, we have received some good fights so far in 2017. We got a lot of them coming up, I just hope that they change the route that they seem to be taking. Now, the co-main event that was broadcast was Lamont Peterson taking on the regular WBA welterweight champion in David Avanesyan. And at the end of the night, Lamont Peterson won the fight. He won a unanimous decision, 115, 113, and two of the judges had it the same at 116, 112. I love this fight because, to me, it was a throwback fight, Sal. There was a lot of action inside. These guys worked the body. It was the anti-Broner Granados fight because it was right inside. They fought in the proverbial phone booth. And I loved watching Lamont Peterson work the body. Now, with that said, and I totally agree with the decision. With that said, there were times when I saw Lamont Peterson take some time off during the fight, stop throwing punches, and he definitely did not look tired at all. This was a guy that looked like he could go 10 more rounds after the final bell. But I don't know. Like, I was talking about the fight on Saturday on the post-fight show, and it just seemed like his game plan was to work the body, and that's it. I also thought that what I see in Lamont Peterson is that he seems to be thinking too much in the ring. The automatic flow of punches and what to do is not coming from this guy. He seems to be thinking, and there's that delay, that slight delay, that may hurt him down the road. Now, he is the regular WBA World Welterweight Champion. It was his first fight ever in the welterweight division. So we'll see where he goes. But I thought he looked real strong, and I actually liked that fight better than the Broner-Granados fight. What did you think?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't see that fight, but I do know that what you're saying there. I think that, you gotta give it to the guys that work the body, want to fight, and keep it going toe-to-toe, and ebb and flow. And I'll tell you, I was a little disappointed with him when I saw the Broner fight, just with his lackluster at times. And Coach made a great comment in the chat room, if I could add that. He said, Broner trains to finish the round, not the fight. I think that's 100% right on what I saw in that fight the other night.
Yeah, well, that's what I was alluding to before when I said he's not. What I liked about him as a lightweight was that he had the hand speed, he had the defense, he had the counter-punching ability, and the big difference was that he was willing to exchange. He seems to have, thrown that willing to exchange out the window.
You said earlier, safety first now.
Well, I mean, if that's what it's about, that's terrible. That's terrible. Yeah. That doesn't make a boxer. I'm sorry. I know that the young fan has been brainwashed thinking that that's the sweet science. Well, it's not. My question now is, what's next for Broner, and what weight class will he be fighting at? Now, he was supposed to fight at 140 in a catchweight. Technically, the fight was at 147 anyway. It was at the welterweight division because it was supposed to be at 142. They ended up changing the fight, basically said to Adrian Granados, take it or leave it. The fight was fought at 147. They both came in and made weight. When I look at the 147 division, I see a lot of good fights for Broner. I just don't see him doing well. I mean, of course, you got Manny Pacquiao. You got the Garcia Thurman winner. You got Timothy Bradley. You got Sean Porter. You got Errol Spence. You got Kell Brook. And if they end up signing, sealed, and delivering their fight, you got that winner. You even have Amir Khan. Those are all big, big fights for Adrian Broner at 147. But to be honest with you, fighting guys that are that big, and it seemingly is obvious now that Adrian Broner has lost his knockout punch at the heavier weights. These guys can punch, and I don't see him faring too well against any of these names: Pacquiao, Garcia, Thurman, Bradley, Sean Porter, Errol Spence, Kell Brook, and even Amir Khan. What do you think?
I think you're right on. I think his power is lost after 135, 140, and I think going up to welterweight is going to be a tough challenge for him. And, probably his best fight of all the ones you mentioned may be Pacquiao for his side.
Well, that would be a big money fight for him for sure.
Yeah. Now, when you look at him having the success he would anticipate having at 147, I don't see it.
When you look at the 140-pound weight class, he's got some big money fights there if he can be disciplined enough to make the win. He's got Terrence Crawford. He's got Terrence Crawford. He's even got other contenders like Amir Aman, Rancis Barthelemy. He's got Victor Postol, Lucas Matisse, Diaz, and even Maurice Hooker. So I mean, if he can stay disciplined, he's got some fights in that division. You know, so we'll have to wait and see. But that's what we got going on with the Adrian Broda fight from this past weekend. So one other fight I'll mention on that card that we got to see, Marcus Brown scored a 6-round stoppage over Thomas Williams Jr. In a fight that didn't show me much. Marcus Brown is undefeated, 19-0, but I think he's got a long way to go. I really do. So we'll keep an eye on him. Another fight that took place this past weekend, Friday night. I think the last guy that was given a ticket, because I don't know anybody that would have paid to see this fight live, they just woke him up in the arena, Sal, and told him he just has to leave. Roy Jones Jr. against Bobby Gunn was a fight that was actually on pay-per-view. If you're not sick enough, the fight was on pay-per-view. What a joke of a fight. In case you missed it, and I hope you did, I'm curious to know if anyone was foolish enough to actually pay for this fight. But Roy Jones Jr., he stopped Bobby Gunn in a fight that looked as choreographed as little ballerinas that are 5 years old trying to do a performance for their parents and grandparents. I mean, this was a joke. Roy Jones Jr., and when you read some of the reports and listen to the commentating, I mean, they're making it sound like Roy Jones was in there with a killer. At the end of the fight, which didn't come quick enough, Bobby Gunn actually said to Roy Jones Jr., did I put up a good fight? He says to him as they're facing each other, did I put up a good fight? I mean, what the hell kind of a question is that?
You're going there to win. You're going there to be dominant. First of all, it was such a lackluster, uneventful fight. It had no right being on pay-per-view. And, man, let me tell you something. It almost showed us glimpses of what Mayweather versus the other guy may look like in a ring. But no, this was totally, I couldn't even believe this fight it took place. And it was so uneventful, so full of just, it was repetitive, round after round. And it looked like Roy Jones was trying to be cute and being a little quick self and all this, but Bobby Gunn didn't offer anything. I don't know where he came from, but I don't want to see any of these guys fight again.
Well, Roy Jones picked up some kind of world title, and was proud about it, and was being challenged after the fight, and he says, "I'll fight anybody," and blah blah blah, and it's a joke, and it's a sad state of affairs for the sport, and specifically for Roy Jones Jr., 48 years old, and he looked every bit of 48 years, and nothing for nothing, but Bobby Gunn was no spring chicken either at 43, clearly just a punching bag. It was very hard to watch.
And why did they stop the fight, Bill?
What happened was in the seventh round.
I know.
In the seventh round, they're making it seem like. It was the seventh round when Roy Jones Jr. landed a combination that stunned Bobby Gunn, and Roy didn't go after him. It was towards the end of the round. The bell rang to begin the eighth round, and the corner stopped the fight. So basically, officially, it was a couple of seconds into the eighth round, which is why on the books it's an eighth round stoppage. But Roy Jones says he's not stopping. The co-main event. Kanat Islam improved to 23-0 with 19 knockouts. Got a headbutt to open up a cut, And then he destroyed his opponent, Robson Assis, with a one-punch knockout at 2 minutes and 12 seconds of the first round. All of that happened in the very first round, and that was that. I will say this. There was another fight on that card that anybody that went to that fight locally probably went to see Tiberi, Joey Tiberi, who's a local product. He let his fans go home happy because he improved to 14-2 when he stopped Brian Timmons in the fourth round. Brian Timmons drops to 5-9. That's it. I mean, that's all I can say about that. I'm just curious to know if anyone out there actually spent the money for Roy Jones Jr. fight. Very sad, very sad. But anyway, we got a couple of emails to read, so let's get those cooking. First and foremost, I got one from my man Johnston, who we're working on getting Johnston to be, just give everybody an FYI, we're working on Johnston to become one of our UK correspondents. We had several in the past, and they all kind of teetered out because of the commitment, I guess. But Johnston, my man Johnston, is going to try and fill that void for us, and look for his column to be up on the website in the near future. His name is Johnston Brown, so check that out. But to keep us at least in the loop, he sent me a quick roundup of some of the UK action this past weekend on in a heavyweight fight from in Stroke on Trent in Cheshire was Nathan Gorman. Now, I have this story up on the website anyway, who's trained by Ricky Hatton. Landed a body shot on his opponent, Godata Gorlades, 109 seconds into the fight, which crippled this guy. Broken rib was what the suspicion of. This kid, this Nathan Gorman, he's only 20 years old. He's now 8-0 with 7 knockouts. A guy to keep an eye on as they keep him active. Also on that card, Asena Byfield stopped a game John Brennan in the sixth round to retain a local title that he has. Byfield now improves to 12-1, and Brennan falls to 7-5-1. And another fight card in Liverpool, Marcel Braithwaite took on a fighter, Jules Phillips. And after four rounds, the chosen one is who they call the well-decorated amateur, Marcel Braithwaite, improved to 3-0. It was a four-round decision. The way the judges scored it was all the same, 40-36. And one other thing that Johnston brought to my attention, Sal, which is a joke. David Hay is calling out Anthony Joshua again. Hay said, and I quote, according to Johnston, hopefully if he wins, he's talking about he being AJ, his team will have the confidence to fight me. And he's talking about David Hay, which is the biggest fight on the planet. Let's make this fight happen. The ball is in his court. This makes me sick, Sal. It makes me sick that people actually buy into it. But what makes me even sicker is the fact that, he says these things. I'm just curious to know if there's anyone that actually believes that, especially over in England. I mean, do people really think that David Hay is even in the discussion? Who's he fought lately? I'll get to something a little more about David Hay here in 1 second. I just want to read one other email, and this was from my man Mitch. He says, man, outside of the Kanat Islam fight, I was right, meaning you were right, meaning me, about the fight card. He says, do me a favor, Billy C. Next time you say on air a fight is a joke, please make sure I actually listen to you and don't go to the fight. My man Mitch actually went and was at this fight ringside, and is admitting to me that he made a terrible, terrible mistake by going to this fight. So I appreciate the honesty from my man Mitch. And I just want to get two things out of the way. before I touch something else real quick. There's been a couple of fights that were announced. One is a big fight that I'm actually looking forward to. Ator Beterbiev, who's 11-0 with 11 knockouts, and a guy that's regarded as one of the best light heavyweights out there, despite his early career, is scheduled to fight Sullivan Barrera, who's also in the top 10, only once beaten, and that was by, I think, who beat him? Was it Andre Ward that beat Sullivan Barrera? I believe it was, but anyway, somebody help me out here. Who beat Sullivan Barrera? Was it Adonis Stevenson maybe? I don't know. One of those guys beat him, but they're scheduled to fight. It's taking place April 21st in Miami, and they're going to be fighting for the to become the mandatory challenger for Andre Ward and one of his pieces of the world title, which is the IBF. You see, now this gives Andre Ward, Sal, an out, if you will, to not fight Sergey Kovalev. These guys are confirming that I'm right, that Sullivan Barrera has already lost to Andre Ward. But this gives him that open pass to say, oh, I got to fight my mandatory, can't fight Kovalev, which makes me sick, Sal.
Yeah, I know. You know, we saw that fight, and, you know, my heart of hearts will always see Kovalev winning that fight, in my opinion. And it would have been beautiful to have a rematch declared right after that fight.
They had it in the contract. I mean, this just goes to show you.
You just said it. They had it in the contract.
Well, you know, you
why
can,
couldn't it be honored?
Well, because there's no honor in this sport anymore. No. And quite honestly, you know the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You know, and Andre Ward he thinks he's the best out there. And quite honestly, I didn't even think he won the fight. You know, another fight that was announced today. German stars, Robin Krasniqi, and a guy that was once a top super middleweight, now fighting still in the super middleweight division, but not as feared as he once was. Robin Krasniqi against Arthur Abraham. They're billing this card as X Day. It's taking place on April 22nd in Germany. So we'll keep our eyes on that one. Let me just say this. You know, we got Dax coming on here in a few minutes, and I just want to touch base real quick on the fight this weekend, Sal, which is going to be taking place in Alabama, and we will be doing a post-fight show on this. It features Deontay Wilder making a defense of his title against what they're billing as a late sub in Gerald Washington, even though Gerald Washington has had well over 3 weeks, closer to four, to prepare for this. I don't know about if we can really use him as a late sub. He's certainly not ready for Deontay Wilder, and Deontay Wilder's not that great, but, just another layup that they hand Deontay Wilder. And people ask me, they say, you know, why aren't you giving Deontay Wilder any credit? Well, you know, I took a look at the heavyweight division this morning, real quickly, at least in with the four major sanctioning bodies, Sal, and I saw where everybody is ranked and everything, which is a joke. And by the way, speaking of a joke, David Haye is ranked as the number one, Sal, as the number one heavyweight contender in the WBO. David Haye. I mean, he hasn't fought anybody of note, not even... He hasn't even insulted anyone of note except for Anthony Joshua. And the WBO has the balls to put him at number one. But it's not even that bad because the IBF has him at number five and the WBA has him at number six. If this doesn't illustrate how corrupt these sanctioning bodies are, I don't know what else does. David Haye is nothing more than a fraud. He was a fraud when he fought in the heavyweight division when he was active. He's a fraud now. And quite honestly, despite his accomplishments at cruiserweight, he ducked the toughest guy at the time to move to heavyweight. So I think David Haye is a complete fraud. He makes me sick. And as much as I, you know, value the UK boxing fans, I'm appalled that the majority of them think that David Haye is even relative to the sport of boxing right now. It's a joke. I just did not think that the UK fans are that stupid that they would believe that David Haye is actually relevant in the heavyweight division. And these sanctioning bodies are paying off, or he's paying off. I don't know. But how can they put this guy in the top six, Sal?
I don't see it. I don't even know. And, you know, like we said, politics as usual. There's politics in boxing, the world rankings and everything else. You know, it's sometimes the money could pave your way and buy your way.
It's BS. Anyway, don't forget to tune in this weekend. As soon as Deontay Wilder knocks out Gerald Washington, we will talk about it here. We are, you know, giving you what we promised, more post-fight shows. So on all the major fights with the major stars. So, and Deontay Wilder, I know I've been very critical with him, but he's a major star in the sport of boxing. And like I started to say, Sal, I took a look at the heavyweight division this morning, and I got to be honest, you know, I've always said that you can't blame a fighter for being in a division that's not strong during their time. The asterisk that you put there is as long as they fight the fighters that are relevant to that division during their time, if they fight everyone, there's no criticism that you can make, a la Mike Tyson, a la Larry Holmes, both fighters that I felt, you know, fought in a weak era, but fought everybody and won against everyone. Deontay Wilder has really four opponents that I see in the heavyweight ranks right now, as of now, that he has to fight to prove that he's among the top. Now, Joseph Parker and Huey Fury, although they're ranked and they are fighting for Joseph Parker's WBO World Heavyweight title, I would be willing to bet my last nickel, which I almost have. I think I have 4 cents. I'm saving. I would almost bet that Wilder's going to fight the winner of that fight because that's the easiest route for him to unify the belt. But there's four names in the heavyweight division that I would classify as a big win for Deontay Wilder, and to shut Billy C up, win for Deontay Wilder. And the names are simple. Luis Ortiz, and this is in no particular order. Luis Ortiz, it's got to fight him. Vladimir Klitschko, gotta fight him, regardless of the outcome of Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua, gotta fight him, regardless of the outcome of Klitschko. And the only wild card that I'll toss in there is Khabib Pulev. You know, Khabib Pulev is a big guy. He's got some pop. He did lose to Vladimir Klitschko in what I think Vladimir Klitschko, his most exciting performance of his career, actually. Those four names, I think Wilder has to fight in his next fight after he knocks out Gerald Washington. He's got to fight one of these guys.
I would love to see that.
One.
Put it up or shut it up.
Just one. If he beats any one of those guys, even if he picks Pulev, I'm happy with it. But I will bet donuts to dollars right now, even though I can't afford to eat a donut. The truth of the matter is, I would bet that Deontay Wilder and his team, who are scared to death about putting Deontay Wilder in any real fight, is going to go after the winner of Joseph Parker and Huey Fury and then pound his chest saying that he's the unified heavyweight champion, and that's it. He'll never fight Anthony Joshua. He'll never fight Luis Ortiz, and he never will fight Vladimir Klitschko. That is why I believe that Deontay Wilder, and no disrespect to him personally, is a fraud. And the saddest part, and somebody asked me in an email last week, Sal, is that he honestly believes that he's the best. And it's sad to see. What do you think?
Well, if he honestly believes it, I mean, that's what the pats on the back, the promotional team and managers are all making him believe. But the guy should really look in the mirror and know that he's not the only and the greatest heavyweight out there today. And he should challenge himself to say, hey, once I clean this up and unify this or have that title, this and that, maybe I will go look out and venture and see what this Anthony Joshua is all about, or see what I could do against Vladimir Klitschko. That to me was to challenge himself.
Exactly.
Now, he wants to still stay in his own little world and be the best there ever was, and he's going to do that.
Yeah, well, he's got to keep believing the press clippings. And he certainly does. But joining us right now, Sal, my man Dax Khan. Good morning, Dax.
Good morning, Sal. I'm enjoying a donut here with the last 50 cents I borrowed off of Bill.
Yeah, I knew I... Yeah, that's what I'm saying,
that's,
man.
That's a long way.
He's eating a donut from my last 50 cents. You bastard. But anyway... So what you got for us today, Dax? I know you weren't super satisfied with the fights this past weekend, but now that you had some time to think about it, what's your thoughts on the Broner win over Adrian Granados? I know on the post-fight show you said you thought Granados won that fight.
I did. You know, I'm not sitting out there calling it a robbery. I didn't say it was a robbery.
No, neither did I. Neither did I. It was close.
Yeah, I just thought Granados, you know, he won it. You know, the judges, who a lot of times you don't agree with, you know, one of the judges seen it the same way I did for Granados, and one seen it the same way I did for Broner, you know, but it happens. There's nothing really to complain about. It was a good fight. As far as the only thing I was dissatisfied with on Saturday was the Williams versus Marcus Brown. I stated, you know something? I'm sorry. I don't like Marcus Brown and the things he does. It's not the first time he's hit behind the head. The excuse at the end was, you know, more or less laughable. Really? How stupid do you think we are? Oh, I seen him on his knee, but I didn't know he was down. He was on his knee, so what didn't you know? You know, he's going to get somebody hurt one day. They need to take, you know, a closer look at him. You know, simple as that. You know, as for Broner, you know, I'm still amused at the comments on thinking about he's going to win the title at 154, which will never happen. He's not going to go up to that division. Why he wouldn't get on the scale for the same day weigh-in. Granados weighed 156.5. What did Broner weigh on the same day? You know, the last minute change. They did the same thing with Vicente Escobedo, you know, last minute, if anybody remembers that. So it tells me Broner didn't stay in the gym and train the way he's supposed to. Adrian Broner is a talented fighter. There is no getting past that. But Adrian Broner is a guy who was rushed too quickly. In an age where there are too many titles and too easily to be had, doesn't always mean because you can win a title, you should send the guy out there for them. Boxing is more mental than physical. People who know the sport, even if you're not a fighter, understand what that term means. And when you're not ready for that, the things that come with that title, meaning the fame, the money, the constant schedule, not only being in the gym, but being under the spotlight, Adrian Broner just not mature enough for that, and it shows, and, you know, it just really, his life is kind of, you know, it's difficult, much like, you know, a celebrity. So, you know, Adrian Broner just, you know, takes some steps back away from the sport, get his head together, get some people around him that, you know, are more interested in Adrian Broner rather than what Adrian Broner brings in, and the guy has a great career. You know, if not, he's going to have a short career, and he's going to end up one of those guys pretty much where it's, you know what, he could have did more, but, and, you know, that's nothing more I can really say about Adrian Broner. As far as people are saying, you know, some people, social media, Michelle Rosado, the Raging Babe, she goes, you know, Adrian Broner went from Mr. HBO to Mr. Pay-Per-View to Mr. NBC, and then Mr. Showtime fight streamed on Twitter, which, you know, it shows exactly, you know, his act is getting old. Some people, a guy on Facebook I talked to, Daniel Kendrick, you know, calls him a cheap carbon copy of Floyd. You know, he lacks the pedigree and the mechanics, and that's exactly what happens with Adrian Broner. Bill, Sal, he's never spent any time being Adrian Broner. He spent too much time trying to be somebody else, and that's the problem with the kid, and that's the child mentality. Be Adrian Broner, you'll be a star, you'll be great, and you're going to have a long career, you're going to accomplish a lot. Keep trying to be everybody else, and you know something, it's not going to work out.
You know, it's an interesting comment, Dax, because I feel that he was Adrian Broner at 135. I think once he, you know, started getting the accolades by people like myself and others in the media, I think that that's when his persona took another turn, and he became the Adrian Broner that we see now. And I think you're 100% right. I think, you know, after that 135 weight class, he started incorporating the shoulder roll more and trying to copy more of Floyd's style and so on and so forth in a lot of ways. The whole About Billions came about. This was all, I mean, if you recall, the only crazy thing he ever did when he was a lightweight was brush his hair, have his pops brush his hair. I mean, that was it. I thought it was funny, you know, but he definitely took a turn for the worse. And I agree with everything you say, and I agree with what the fans are saying. You know, I mean, this is a guy that I was shocked that many people showed up for the fight. To be honest with you, I mean, you know, who actually cares about him? I guess more people than I thought. They said that there was almost 10,000 people in the arena.
It was a good fight, you know, and Adrian Broner is a likable guy. He you know, it just, as you stated, you know, the shtick has gone too far. And again, you know, if he had people around him that really cared, and I'm not saying that, you know, everybody around him is looking just to take advantage of him, but if they had people around him that really cared, when he was in the Paulie Malignaggi fight, and Paulie Malignaggi was able to touch him up so easily at 147 pounds, you know, considering Paulie, you know, has almost no power, you know, he's a light touch, they should have said, listen, this is not where you belong. And you know something? The type of beating he took from Marcos Maidana, contrary to Al Bernstein, said, oh, well, Maidana did well late. No, Maidana beat him from one end of that ring to the other the whole night. You know, it was like a man versus a boy. And they should have brought him back down, and they should have, you know, kind of rebuilt him, kept him where he's doing, but fixed the flaws and say, listen, this isn't the division for you. We need to work harder in the gym and stay at 135. You know, and that's pretty much, you know, all I can say about that. You know, other than that, I just wish Adrian Broner the best. A little bit of adjustment, and you know something, he has a great career ahead of him. And, you know, that's a... nothing more you can say, but there's a lot of other news going on in the sport that, you know, hopefully we can talk about.
All right, shoot.
All right, one, we'll talk about, you know, the Roy Jones Jr. fight. You know, that was sad. You know, it wasn't even a couple guys looking to hang on for a last-minute payday for a little bit of fame. You know, it was sad. You know, for example, like you stated, how Bobby Gunn Jr. is saying, oh, did I do well? You know, this is, you know, if you're asking if you did well to somebody after they just beat you half to death, you know, it's, you know, listen, it's time to go. You know, the World Boxing Foundation, they'll sanction anything. I know some members of there were mad on social media. They were sending out messages, you know, how dare people criticize our organization. You know, when you're making this a world title fight, yeah, you have the right to be criticized. You know, there has been sanctioning bodies out there that are small, such as the IBC, which, you know, a lot of guys at the end of their careers fought for these titles, you know, but they never, you know, played it off. The IBC never played it off that they were more than what they were. But guys like Duran, Camacho, Razor Ruddock, even Tommy Morrison and Lennox Lewis fought for that title. You know, it was just something more or less to keep the fans interested, but, you know, it was also something where, you know, the guys can sit there and say, I know what level I'm at now. I'm not at the top level. I'm not at the bottom level. This is the twilight of my career. Now I'm fighting for the fans. I'm not trying to fight and fool myself or fool anybody else. Unfortunately, when you get places like the World Boxing Foundation that will continue to go and sanction guys like Roy Jones and fill his head into thinking that he is a top guy, you know something, what you're doing is you're just helping this guy stay deluded. It's not good for the sport. It's not good for the fighter.
I don't think that he thinks he's... I think that he is doing exactly what we see. I think he knows what he's doing, exactly what we're seeing. He is. If you look at his fights the last several years, he handpicks guys that have no chance. He basically the proverbial punching bag with a couple of arms. You know, he's not. I mean, does he call out some of the big names? Yeah, because he's looking to get a payday. But I honestly don't think that Roy Jones thinks he's in the same class as a Kovalev or a Ward or you know anybody else in a bigger division. I mean, those are light heavyweights, let alone cruiserweights. I mean, some of these cruiser. I mean, could you see him with Marco, Captain Huck, or Gassiev, or one of these guys?
He thought Enzo Mack was going to be a safe fight too, and look how that ended.
Yeah, you know. So, No, I don't know. I think he's just fleecing the fans. I think he's trying to get some money. He's, you know, hoping that one of these fight cards that he gets makes some money. I would love to see what the numbers were for this fight, but if more than 10 people bought it, I would be shocked. I mean, what a joke.
Absolutely. And the three other things away from the ring that are worth, you know, a talk about today, which I think, one, Andrew Garcia. You know, right now, the racial tensions in this country, around the world, and especially in boxing, we talk about all the time how high it is and how things go to the limits. You know, Andrew Garcia and his recent rant about Asians, saying how they all smell like cat piss. You know, you just got in trouble not too long ago from New York State Commission about all your comments on Muslims. You know, we're trying to incite more hate. You know, this is enough already. You know, when is somebody going to put their foot down and say, you know something, Angel Garcia, you got to go. This is not a debate on whether or not a father should be in his son's corner. This is, you know, a topic where, you know something, the guy's out there inciting hate crimes, because right now that's all it takes is a little word to be said, and then, you know, you're at the fights, and then somebody mentions, oh, did you hear what he said about the Muslims? Did you hear what he said about the Asians? Did you hear about, and then somebody of that, the race or religion hears it, and they say something back, and it turns into something bigger. You know, if anybody on the street says it about somebody, yells at somebody, you can be arrested for a hate crime, you know, inciting something, and this guy's out here doing this consistently, and it's making the news, and you know something, it's not good. In my opinion, Angel Garcia's got to go, and somebody needs to put their foot down and just get rid of him. This is unacceptable. I'm sorry. It really is, and it angers me, because it's beyond unacceptable.
I can't agree with you more, Dax.
You know, it really is. Now, Yusuf Mack. I like Yusuf Mack. Always like Yusuf Mack, you know. I don't really know him personally. I've done a few interviews with Yusuf. He's always came off as a nice guy. In the ring, he always gives it all. Win or lose, you know, Yusuf Mack is never a guy who came out there and gave his half heart. You know, he had his highly publicized incident about his sexuality. There was that porn video that was released. And, of course, you know, social media being social media, people are going to talk. And what happens is, again, like I was stating with Andrew Garcia, people go too far. There was a guy who just went a little bit too far, and he just continuously and relentlessly harassed Yusuf Mack. You know, this is a guy who, you know, irregardless of what your opinion is, he does have a family. You can only push people so far. Yusuf Mack, you know, over the weekend found this guy in the barbershop, and, you know, he gave him a good old-fashioned beating. You know, he left the guy cowering and begging inside the barbershop not to hurt him. You know, and in my opinion, you know, the guy got what he deserved. You know, these keyboard warriors, you know, the keyboard doesn't always protect you. It doesn't matter if you're on the internet or you're off the internet. You know, there comes a point in time, you know, something you can't pass. You know, you can't go too far when it comes to these respects. You know, it happened in the past with Curtis Woodhouse. It happened with the UFC fighter Josh Neer. It happened with Deontay Wilder when somebody came to Deontay Wilder's gym, another internet troll, and called Deontay Wilder racial slurs. Luckily, Wilder didn't kill him. You know, so, you know, enough is enough with this. You know, when are people going to stop, and when are people going to understand? You know something, you can't do these things. In our chat room on YouTube, you know, just recently, you know, the SWAT stickers and the things that are going on there, you know, these things are just, I don't understand the mindset of these people. Are these true boxing people, or are these actually just people looking to stir things up? Is my confusion on this, Bill. Maybe you can answer this, you can answer this, Sal, because boxing has always been that one sport where everybody unites, and it's all about what goes on in the ring, and all this other nonsense that's invading the sport is just hurting it greatly.
I think you hit it, my opinion is, I think you hit it on the head. I think with the fact that the internet, you know, gives people that anonymous, you know, they can be the tough guy behind the keyboard, like you suggest. I was ready to write notes when you mentioned the Curtis Woodhouse situation over in England. I mean, I loved that when that happened 2 years ago. A guy just trolling him and harassing him, and this guy Woodhouse finds him, knocks on his door. I loved it, you know. As far as the Deontay Wilder, that I think that particular guy was mentally challenged, and I watched the video that went around, and Deontay Wilder hit him a bunch of times, And the kid kept getting up.
But he didn't hurt him, you know. He could have. And same thing with Yusuf Mack. Yusuf Mack could have hurt this guy, you know. But he didn't. You know, he just kind of put him in his place. You know, this again, the guy in terms of Deontay Wilder. This is also the same guy who goes to gyms and pretends he's a fighter. This is the guy who sucker punched an old man in Floyd Mayweather Sr. And he's done a lot of things like this, you know. And it's the internet that allows this, empowers this, and gives these people the right to think that this is okay. I don't understand this. It's scary.
Yeah, no, it's a tough world we live in, that's for sure.
And then Michael Watson, former middleweight title challenger, you know, the man who had Nigel Benn his first career loss. He had two fights with Chris Eubank Jr. back-to-back. Michael Watson was always a dangerous guy, always gave it his all in the ring. You know, this weekend, him and his caretaker were the victims of the carjacking. You know, they were at a red light. Somebody came up and sprayed some sort of chemical. They believe it was ammonia in the face of the driver, and they attacked Michael Watson, who was actually drugged from the car, his body half hanging out. He suffered burns along his whole body. You know, he's back home now, but that was a dangerous situation there, you know, where this guy was not only assaulted, his caretaker was assaulted, he was drugged down the street, you know, and this is, it's not, in the last 2 years, we've seen about three or four incidents like this with these UK fighters. Kell Brook, what was it, last year or the year before, he was stabbed in the leg, you know, or do they target the fighters, or, you know, it's just random and by accident.
I don't know, but it's a crazy mixed-up world we live in today, Dax.
I don't understand the mentality. It really is. It's like you said, it's a crazy mixed-up world, and boxing was always supposed to be, you know, that settler for you, and I just never understood that. But both Daniel Jacobs and Gennady Golovkin, you know, came in under the limit of 176 for their fight. We mentioned that Raul Marquez's son, you know, he improved to 6-0 this weekend. And Vasyl Lomachenko and Jason Sosa, that sounds like a good fight for April 8th, but I'm starting to wonder, does Jason Sosa kind of sound like, you know, he has an opponent's mindset going into this? You know, his recent comment of, you know, what do you think of Vasyl Lomachenko? He's the closest thing to perfection in boxing. You know, he was more focused on talking about how great Vasyl Lomachenko was than the fight itself. You know, does that happen? Especially, Sal, you know, you as a former fighter, you know, does that happen? You get really, you start admiring the guy so much that, you know, something, you kind of lose a little bit of your hunger. You just happen to be in there with him.
Well, I that never happened to me, no. I can't recall that, But I know what you're saying. I definitely understand you.
Well, I have said that what Dax just said. I've said that many times about Floyd. You know, when Floyd picks an opponent. Well, let me rephrase that. When Floyd cherry picks an opponent, that opponent just, it's like they hit the lottery financially. And
oh, yeah.
And I've always said, you know, how do you go in there? With the exception of Marcos Maidana, who didn't understand him because he didn't speak English, you know, how do you go in there wanting to take this guy's head off that just made you financially secure for the rest of your life? I've admitted myself, if Floyd Mayweather sent me a check for $1 million in the mail, I would find it very hard to talk negatively about the guy. It's human nature.
I want to go in the ring and rip his head off.
I mean, I would love to go in the ring and rip his head off.
Hey, he gave me the shot, the opportunity. I'm willing to go for it, and I got the opportunity, and I'm going to go for all the gusto, and I'm going to go in there and take my opportunity and make it to the max.
I wish everyone felt like that. You know, I do, but I don't.
Forget about it. You give me the opportunity anytime. No, you take it. You squelch it. You eat it. You spit it out. You go do it. You get that opportunity. It's a once in a lifetime. And you take it for all it's going to be. Because, baby, you ain't going to ride that ship again. Unless you do it. Unless you make your stake right there. You got to show it. You give an opportunity. You grab it by the gullion. And you take it.
Listen, I applaud that attitude. And I wish that all fighters had that. I just think that, you know, when you're talking about a multi-million dollar payday, human nature kicks in. But any other thoughts, Dax?
My last thought is, and we speak about this all the time, Coach over in the chat room says it all the time, and we see it more and more all the time on how boxing is becoming so much more like WWE, and especially with this, the UFC and the Conor McGregor calling out Floyd Mayweather, that's a hot topic everywhere. I was watching something this weekend on Brock Lesnar, the former college wrestler, elite college wrestler, turned WWE star, and then UFC fights there. He wins a world title, and now he retires from there, and now he's back in wrestling. And he was telling a story about, exactly how that happened, that Dana White wouldn't let him in there. They wouldn't return his calls when he wanted to come into fighting, because Dana White, put on that persona of, I'm not going to have a sideshow. He said the same thing about Kimbo Slice, and he lets Kimbo Slice on there. And Brock Lesnar speaks about how he jumped over the railing at an event and called Dana White out, and that's how he gets into the UFC. Is there any shame, with Dana White? Is this guy maybe the biggest con man that there is, that he discredits everybody, and he talks about every other organization, whether it's MMA or whether it's boxing, but he seems kind of behind the scenes, and he fuels this type of behavior. Is Dana White more Barnum and Bailey, or is he more about the sport? I'm starting to wonder this, because, it seems like this is actions that he encourages, and a lot more fighters are starting to come out there, and they're starting to do this, even in boxing. That's how, they're jumping to the rings post-fight, and it's happening on a more and more common basis here. I don't understand, at some point in time, do you think for the integrity of the sport, we're going to have to sit there and have some sort of rule implement that says, and they used to do this, if you're not involved in the event, it doesn't matter if you're Floyd Mayweather, it doesn't matter if you're Oscar De La Hoya, it doesn't matter who you are, but you're not coming in the ring if you're not involved in the event, because something, we do have some integrity to keep.
I wish that would happen. It's gone off. A simple explanation is they give the people what they want. The fans want to see that. They cheer. They like it. So they keep doing it. It's a shame. It's a shame.
Sometimes you got to, compromise your integrity for it. The fans still will come. Boxing's not going anywhere. So I don't get it. It confuses me, and it just reminds me, Bill, someday I may be as old as you in 30 or 40 years, and I can only imagine what I think about then, because now I'm back in the day.
When you get to be my age, Dax, all you'll be thinking about is, I hope I wake up tomorrow morning as you're going to bed. So we'll see. But, Dax, thanks for the call, and we'll talk to you later in the week, brother.
All right, everybody, enjoy your day. It looks like a good one out there.
Take care, Dax.
Take care. Dax makes some good points, Sal. It just seems that... the integrity of all combat sports, not just boxing, like he alluded to, UFC, the same. And just to touch on that potential McGregor-Mayweather fight, that's a joke. And that is a WWE matchup, because Conor McGregor, although he's dominating in MMA and specifically the UFC, wouldn't stand a chance against Floyd Mayweather. He gets winded in MMA, let alone Floyd. Floyd will, play with him and toy with him. He'll be like a cat playing and toying with, a ball of yarn, and who knows, maybe even Floyd could knock him out. Floyd's longing for a knockout, hasn't had one in quite some time because he's such a girly hitter. Maybe he can knock out Conor McGregor. I just hope the fight never happens. I think if Floyd stayed retired, that's great. I think it's good for the sport. But if he chooses to come back for his 50th fight, and specifically a 50th win, I think it's got to be against a real opponent, somebody that will help catapult that 50th win and the significance that goes with it into the history books. A win over Manny Pacquiao, a win over Timothy Bradley or a Kell Brook or some big name, even a younger fighter, to get his 50th win. That is more memorable than any fight than Floyd Mayweather had throughout his whole career. A win over Conor McGregor for his 50th would be a travesty for boxing. It would be whatever commission allows it, if they don't require Conor McGregor to fight some fights first, I think that's a whole argument in itself.
I agree with you 100% across the board. You just said it. Everything I would just be repeating.
Yeah, well, like I said, for everybody, don't forget... on Wednesday, we're doing our Blast from the Past. Is going to feature Kevin Kelly. We also are scheduled to have Larry Hazard join us Friday. We open up the phone lines. We also wanted to welcome a new affiliate, WGIG AM. I want to tell everybody to make sure they get themselves some tickets to go to the Turning Stone on March 11th when we got a big fight happening between Curtis Stevens and David Lemieux. I'm going to be ringside, so we won't be doing a post-fight show, but I want to see you guys there, so get yourself some tickets. You can get to the box office real easy if you visit our website, BillyCBoxing.com, and click on the fight poster, which is on the right, and then drop me an email. Let me know where you want me to meet you so you can buy me a scotch. Yeah, because I'll be drinking some scotch that night for sure. But one other thing, don't forget, Saturday night, after Deontay Wilder knocks out Gerald Washington, we will be doing a post-fight show right here, wherever you're watching or listening to our show. So make sure you check it out approximately 6 minutes after the official announcement is made. But I got some stuff that took place on this day in boxing history. Sal, you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. Let's go for it, pal.
On this day, February 20th, in 1933, a battle in Shaw wins a 10-round decision over Johnny Jadick to win the world junior welterweight title. It took place in New Orleans. On this day in 1999, Teron Millett knocks out Vince Phillips in the fifth round to win the IBF world junior welterweight title. It took place in New York City. On this day in 1997, Jerry Penaluza wins a 12-round decision over Hiroshi Kawashima to win the WBC World Junior Bantamweight title. Took place in Japan. I know you're laughing at my pronunciation right now, Sal.
No, not me.
On this day.
I'll bastardize it even worse.
You could say Alfa Romero pretty quickly, though. But on this day, February 20th, in 1938, Sixto Escobar wins a 15-round decision over Harry Jeffer to win the world bantamweight title. Took place in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And finally, on this day, February 20th, in 1976, Muhammad Ali knocks out Jean-Pierre Koopman in the fifth round to retain his world heavyweight title, and that took place at the Roberto Clemente Coliseum in Puerto Rico on this day, February 20th, in 1976. Any final thoughts, Sal?
No, I'm just looking forward to the Deontay Wilder fight this weekend, and, you know, we'll see. It's going to probably be not quite a snooze fest, but I want to see how his tuned up with his hand is and everything else, so he won't have any excuse on who he's going to face next.
Yeah, he'll have an excuse, and I, you know, they're trying to make Gerald Washington out to be a legitimate opponent for Deontay. But it's going to be interesting to see. Gerald Washington is still raw. Deontay Wilder certainly is no world beater, but I anticipate him to come out and just try and take him out of there like he likes to do, you know.
Well, see, like I was saying earlier, Washington has his one chance to shine, his one moment. Let's see if he could rise to the occasion and thank Deontay for giving this opportunity and capitalize on it and pull an upset. That would be a hell of a headline.
Well, I'm just suggesting, and I'm not saying that this happened, but you know, I'm going to suggest the fact that both are managed under the same guy. And do you think there could be any bonus dollars being tossed Washington's way to, you know, not go into that ring with the Sal Senecola attitude?
Yeah, I won't go there, but there's always there. You know, always, like I said, politics and money talk in the game of boxing.
Hey, everybody, make sure you tune in Wednesday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby.